Hey, we have an amazing episode, here, new, published. I will talk to Jan from Needle, building Needle like an AI tool. He's a Berlin founder, part of the Berlin ecosystem, and I like him, and I am super stoked to have him on the show. One thing before I start into the episode, I wasn't publishing since a really long time. I feel shameful and sorry for that, especially as I was recording episodes with guests and guests are waiting for me. I was for many, many months, having a laser focus on launching Split, which was needed and was important. And I'm super, super crazy proud of the launch of Split, and it's a cool app. I really like it. And in general, starting at Finance School, it's a cool company. I'm really happy to be at Finance School. But I think I was losing focus with this podcast for a while. And I want to change that because I really like doing podcast episodes. I really think it's just a great investment of my time. I enjoy these conversations so much. I get to know all these crazy cool people. So this is a message to say, for anyone waiting, I'm sorry. It's a message for everyone who's wondering what's going on with this podcast. Yeah, there are pre-recorded episodes. They will be published. I have to double check with the guests if they still want episodes, which are maybe a little bit delayed, if they still should be recorded published because so many things are happening right now. Same for Needle. We recorded an episode a year ago. And I was reaching out to Jan and was like, man, should we still publish? Because things could be outdated. And gosh, Jan was such a nice, forgiving person to me. I was like, man, that's life. That's how it works sometimes. And he told me about some of his fuck ups. And I think overall, he has a super, super impressive bio and is doing he's doing a AI startup in Berlin. How cool is that? I think I did a long enough introduction. It's something where I just want to show awareness of hey, I know it's not how it should be, but it's not about me not enjoying a podcast. I really love this podcast. I really want to do this for the rest of my life. So why not start again? Fail again, start again, improving, failing, improving, failing forward. And I'm so happy that a new episode is coming back. Thank you so much. And now enjoy the episode with Jan from Needle. Welcome to the Digital Economics Podcast. It has been a long time since I recorded the last episode, and I'm so happy to start again with Jan. Jan, can you tell us who you are and what you're doing?
Yeah, thank you very much, Luis. Happy to be here also today. I keep it short. My name is Jan Heimes. I'm co-founder of Needle, needle.app, a vibe automation platform. My background, very diverse. Two bachelor degrees, one in mechanical engineering, another in industrial engineering. Lived across different countries such as France, Spain, the US, Denmark, Netherlands, Switzerland, and studied my master's also in Denmark in artificial intelligence. Worked for a YC startup in San Francisco for some time. Additionally, for a scale-up in Switzerland, Zurich, called Climeworks for some time. And from Zurich, I moved then to Berlin and did nothing else in Berlin but working on Needle scaling the startup where I'm still working as of today. Raised a 2.2 million round with Needle and right now on growth stage.
You're 27. That's really a lot of things for a 27-year-old person. And I think what's visible throughout all your career is that you made a lot of really, really bold decisions. And I think a lot of people who want to build their own startup and in general are in the scene are often afraid of making these bold decisions. Do you have recommendations for people doing bold or who want to do bold decisions? How was it in your life? Were you always super adventurous and courageous?
Actually, a very funny point of view. Recently, my father sent me a video of me being 12 years old and I have two siblings. And if I watch the video, I'm even a bit embarrassed of myself because I'm crazy active in this video. I think like some people thought maybe I have ADHD or I'm hyperactive when I was a child. So I was always very active and pushing very hard to like on different things. But it was not that I was bold when I was younger. For example, I was also like more of a shy guy and more of kind of the shy, nerdy group in high school. I was not like one of the cool people, kind of one of the maybe bold guys who ask girls out for dates. I was more of the guy who would play games on his phone or calculator. If you remember, you could play games on the calculator. So I was not always bold, but then I realized like, I think one thing which really changed me is that when I was 19 or I just 18 and a half, I just got a bit of money from my aunt and I said, what should I do with this money? It was back then 5,000 euro. I put half of it into Nvidia stocks, which was a very good investment in the end. And half of it I actually used just to travel to Southeast Asia for 3 months just by myself. And I think I made really many discoveries there. I met my mentor there. And I think I pushed my personal boundaries there to become like more of an independent person and making bold moves. And one thing, I don't want to talk too much about it because I think it's not maybe super exciting, but one thing I want to say is one day I met at the pool a guy called Connor, and Connor said to me, he was from the US, "Yo bro, I think you're a nice guy and an interesting dude and you seem to be a smart dude. Let's keep in contact." Later, I studied in the US 2 years later and I say, "Yo bro, I'm now in the US and we kind of kept in contact a bit, but we didn't see each other since then. And he said, "Yo, I live right now in LA. Come by my place. You can sleep in my place." So I fly to LA, I visit the guy, and he just hosts me in his very nice like penthouse flat in LA downtown. And kind of that showed me also a bit that, you know, opportunities can be everywhere. And in the end, I mean, I worked in a YC startup in San Francisco where he was part of the founding engineering team. And if you have a connection like this, he became kind of my mentor. He taught me also heavily to become a good software engineer. I was able to get into there because it's very hard if you don't hold a US visa or US citizenship as a non-US visa citizenship to actually be able to work for such a place because you're competing with everybody else and everybody else doesn't need a visa sponsorship. So it's good to know somebody also. And I think that showed me that you sometimes just to make random moves in life, and random moves turn out to be sometimes interesting, even though in the first place we just had, for example, shared a beer at the pool. You never know where things go. So I just think be open for whatever comes. Make sometimes random moves and bold moves and say maybe they convert to something random and cool and fun and nice. But sometimes maybe also don't return at all. But that's also okay. Then you made just a fun memory, you know. So I think maybe that.
I really love this about you. Like you... If I meet you somewhere, like you're always super energetic and like sometimes it's like a little bit random, but it's always like in the end making sense, the things you're telling. I think the role model thing is quite interesting. Like how does it work? Like he's a mentor for you, you're saying. So you also have video chats sometimes and you have like a person to ask questions and stuff?
Yeah, for example, I can ask and maybe he knows again other people. For example, when I raced around for Needle Startup, he knows somebody else who also is a startup founder from San Francisco, maybe raced like a 6 million round. Then I can ask him, "Hey, yo, can you put me in contact with this guy?" And it's this 10-minute conversation with this guy over a phone call. It's very, very valuable because this person already went through many things and you can kind of this information is very rare also to have. How many people do you know that have raced around and went through this? Not so many. So, I mean, it's very valuable connection to have. And yeah, we do have sometimes phone calls. When I was younger, as I said, when I was like 21, 20, we had like almost like every week a call and I had like kind of homework. He gave me kind of homework. Yo, learn SQL, learn React, learn Ruby on Rails back then. And I did my homework and they kind of checked in with me and I kind of, it was like a 1 year bootcamp or 1.5 year bootcamp to really become a good programmer so that that I have a very strong positioning to be able to be accepted to work for the startup because it's a very competitive place to work for. And as of today, if you have once this label, I work for a YC startup on your CV, it's kind of like a very strong label, which opens many other doors again in the future. So it's a bit like you push one boundary, which then opens up a whole new field. That's, I think, one of the things.
With this mentorship thing, I think it's really interesting. We have like a similar thing where I did the same for product management, but I really wanted to get into product management. And when I just reached out to product managers and was like, hey, I want to talk to you. Can you give me 15 minutes of your time and explain this and that? You built something cool there. But I always wondered, and maybe you have an answer for that, why did your mentor do this? Why did he support you? So you weren't giving him money, right? It was just because of other reasons.
I guess he said he saw something in me. He said, you seem to be somebody who pushes boundaries and this is my dude and I like you. So I don't know. I think he also felt a bit like he's 10 years older than me, maybe giving back a bit, because he said when he was my age, when he was young, he had a mentor. And actually now I'm 27 and sometimes, I mean, I'm doing right now Needle and the startup and I'm pushing really hard. I think maybe one day when I don't do startup anymore, let's say, I would also want to give back. Maybe I would see somebody like 18-year-old and I would see like a younger version of myself. Like I would see something in this person that I can relate to, because, and then maybe I would like to support this person too, you know, like to kind of, it's like a bit like parenting, I guess, or something. I don't know. But, so you give, you take.
If you would talk to younger yourself, what would be like some key learnings which you would like do right now? Like if you would be like right after uni or maybe during university and you have like some ideas what you want to do in your life, but not actually a plan. What would your recommendations be?
I would say to this dude, bro, just keep going as you go. I think you're on a good path. But I would also say, you know, don't like over worry about things. I think sometimes we make very small problems to big problems, and in the end everything resolves. It's something I learned now. Like maybe there's a problem now and it appears to be a big problem, but bro, sun rises tomorrow again, you know, and I will solve this problem somehow. So don't like over, when I was younger, I think sometimes I was a bit like over worrying about some problems. So I would like, oh, I don't know, this and this exam, I need to get exactly this and this grade to be able to do this and that and this and this and that. And maybe it's true. There's a lot of chain of like actions, such as maybe if you have a specific average grade, which opens you to allow a specific master's degree that you want, or let's say you need to do this TOEFL test. You need a specific score in this TOEFL test to be accepted in the master's degree or for the exchange in the US or something like this. I mean, but in the end, everything always works out. Like for real, everything always works out. And yeah, it's good to worry sometimes, but to not over worry and just keep going and be curious.
Someone who really wants to build a startup, do you think this person should go to university or should also this person do like a career? Like you said, you got like a lot of like crazy interesting insights working for a YC startup.
And also for the Climeworx in Switzerland, actually, that was also very interesting. I must say, also giving me some insights. I think, I mean, you see many times these kind of love stories of like people building, oh, 20-year-old dropout from MIT, started XYZ company, and now became millionaire, like Snapchat, right? Snapchat story kind of. But if you look at the total data of all founders and all the unicorns that were built or big startups that were built, most of them are not super young. Most of them are like, I think 30 to 50 years old or something like this, have worked and studied in a specific field for a very long time and have very good knowledge in a specific field. And for example, we could not build Needle now as Needle is if I would just be a university dropout, because Needle is a very deep tech, complicated product. And it's not something you can just vibe code or just something you can just like build when you're super young, I think. It's very technical, very deep tech, a lot of DevOps work and so on. So for example, Onur, my co-founder, is a crazy, amazing, smart, technical dude. And even for him, it's also, there's many technical challenges on the way, and he's 32, worked already a long time in different fields. So I think not so realistic, but if you're a startup founder and maybe you build something like a phone app or something like low-key, and you are very good in creating content and going viral, I think then you don't need a degree. Yes. Like there's many companies these days which just try to go viral also and just go viral on TikTok and then try to sell a product and do like bootstrap something and then do a fast cash out. But I think really companies that provide value long term and maybe become unicorn or something, I think these companies are not just built by a random dropout, to be honest. And I think I'm not saying it just because I think that. I'm basing this on real data.
And do you think working experience helps before like getting something started?
I think working experience in the right environment. I, for example, once did an internship in a bank in Düsseldorf. And I was there for 3 months working as a, I don't know, investment associate or something like this, like to review kind of investments and stuff. And I'm not so sure if that really helped me. I think these 3 months were kind of like, maybe 1 week would have been enough to understand that people in bank, how the way they think, how the way they feel, because maybe one day you want to sell a product to them, then you need to understand how these guys work and think. But I think that didn't help me so much. But what did really help me, as I said, to push on myself, like push the boundaries, because sometimes you need to torture yourself a bit to just get over the mountain. If you just do like a job for, let's say 10 years and you do a 9-to-5 job, you just drink coffee in your workplace and you chill and you basically don't really learn and do anything, then I don't think that's really a help. Then it's better just to squeeze yourself over the weekend and learn some new skill, which is bringing you more value than this work experience, because that's not really work experience. So I think that is the case, I think. Yeah. But if you work in a very high driven environment, let's say you work in a scale up startup for like 1-2 years, you work with really smart people and you push really hard, then you can learn a shit ton of things. I think time, it doesn't mean more knowledge, because there's the factor of how intense it is. Time multiplied by intensity equals maybe your growth and knowledge. Intensity is super low because you're working a very chill job, then sure, 10 years times 0.1 equals to 1, but 1 year times 1 equals also 1, then it's 1 year is the same output as 10 years because the intensity is 10 times higher.
Yeah, I really have very, very different jobs. Some I learned nothing and some I learned the same amount which I learned in the other job in 1 year, like in one day in LA. I wonder if we could do like a little how to build a startup. So I wonder like what you would recommend someone like who wants to build a startup, like how to come up with a great idea. What was your aha moment where you was like, yeah, needle is it? How to come up with an idea?
I think you never have this, that you are like, this is it. You always are thinking, maybe this is it. I think even you maybe heard once the speech of, I think it was this Salesforce CEO. I think he said, we are just taking things. We are throwing against the wall. Maybe 1 million things. And one thing sticks. And then you double down on whatever sticks. But it's not, you're making assumptions. And how did we start, Needle? How to story? First point. Find yourself like a co-founder. I think that's very hard. Find yourself somebody that you can hang out with every day. Sometimes we stay in the office until 10 and I come into the office at 8:30. So I see this guy maybe 13, 14 hours, but then in the midnight, maybe I need to do a call because something is broken and we need to jump quickly on a screen share call. Like find somebody that you can really work with all the time because it's like a marriage. And I think finding a co-founder really, really hard. Many people struggle with this. I think because most of the startups, I think it's 50%. Don't take me exactly on this number, but it's around that, I think. Break because co-founders break up. It's the number one reason, right? So find yourself a co-founder that you're matching with, you're vibing with, and you're liking also. Not just like, sure, you should also be compatible with skill set, and which is also the case in our case. Uno is, I think, I mean, we're both technical, but I'm more like of an extrovert kind of marketing sales guy, I guess, like trying to do more growth hacking stuff. He's like a very deep tech, orientated to detail and focus. I'm more like a bit of a random trying new things. And that combination, I think, is very powerful. But finding this person is very difficult. And to find this person, you should like maybe sit yourself together 2 weeks before you really say, let's work together. Set yourself as if you're in a really intense startup environment. 2 weeks together, see each other every day. And if you afterwards still don't hate each other and can endure each other, then maybe you're co-founders. And when it comes to the idea part, another part, I think what is very helpful for me is to talk to my friends who are working in the industry. Like we are starting Needle as a retrieval augmented generation API, RAG API. Who doesn't know what is RAG? RAG basically allows LLMs to tap into your private knowledge base because you are indexing your private data and you're basically saying to an LLM, yo, look at my private, look at this data, which is relevant for this query, and answer this question, which I put to you. Let's say, for example, what is my tax ID number? Because an LLM wouldn't have like scraped the data of my tax ID personally, but it may live somewhere in my tax ID documents. And then it can say, yo, I scraped your, I looked into your documents. I found your tax ID number is blah, blah, blah. So it can answer your personal things. But we started this RAG API because we have many friends who works in Accenture, maybe in Deloitte, maybe in Google or something, in different kind of tech companies. And they said they see a huge right now market of many companies wanting to build their own internal enterprise AI chat or build a chat widget on their website. And to do that, you need RAG. And another very, very great source besides like people you talk to and know in a network is Reddit. Because what is trending on Reddit is always trending before it's anywhere else trending. What is trending on Reddit and where people are actually really real people express their concern. For example, on Reddit, there's a channel which is called RAG. And on this RAG channel, many people were asking, yo, I want to build a RAG API. I mean, I'm talking about 2025, beginning of 2025, right? Last year, when because now we are still RAG API, but maybe an automation tool. They asked many times this question, and it sounded like many people have the same problem on Reddit, where they want to set up RAG pipelines, but they don't want to spend so much time and effort, and they don't know which chunking strategy they should use and so on. So why is there not just a package solution that helps everybody just to ship a solution fast without needing them to set up vector databases, thinking about chunking strategies and so on? And that's how the idea came, like a RAG API. So we were starting with RAG API. And I think these are the two things, founder and idea. And I think Reddit can be a very valuable source here to validate your idea. You should maybe also create a post. Let's say you have an idea about, look, I want to start a RAG API. Go to this Reddit channel. Yo, guys, I have this thought of creating this RAG API. Some of you, what do you think? And on Reddit, normally people are brutally honest. They say, yo, guys, your idea sucks. 50 other companies already do that. Don't take it all too honest because Reddit people are also very angry all the time. But generally, it's great to hear the people there, I think. And yeah, don't be like, oh, my idea is so precious, I don't want to share it on Reddit because somebody else on Reddit might steal it. Well, you need to validate your idea, you know?
Mm-mm. And yeah. You would validate before you would build anything.
I would validate, yes. I mean, we validated this RAG API and then we just also said, okay, we validate now enough. Let's fucking build and see how people accept the solution and then talk to users all the time. I try to talk to users every day. I talk to users still every day today because users have very different experiences and very different things they want to reach. But what the users say, not all users also use your product right. You have to talk also with the right users. Maybe if there's like, for example, like somebody who is not really your user, your ICP, but hates on your solution, then yeah, you know, then also not really valuable this feedback. But if it's a very, say, for example, for me, very valuable are AI consultancies, like smaller consultancies who build solutions for their clients. They use like Needle as a tool to build solutions for their clients. And we are partnering a lot with them. So if somebody is interested in hearing here and becoming a Needle partner, curious to explore that, then very, very important to jump on call with them and really understand what they want and what they are doing. But that's kind of the next step, I think. Like co-founder, then idea, build something very kind of okay, but creates value for them, throw it at them, and then see how they deal, use it. And then talk.
The user interview part, like, is this always easy to get in contact with the people? Because it's a SaaS, so probably, like, it's B2B, probably it's easier to write the email being like, hey, I saw you were using Needle. Do you want to talk to us or how does it work in practice?
Best channel is actually LinkedIn because I can see their LinkedIn from when they sign up to Needle. I kind of have like a mapping. I have a Needle workflow which allows me to map user's name, company and email to their LinkedIn. So I'm running a deep research on LinkedIn. So I find their LinkedIn and then I do have an automation in Needle also which does a Needle automation to LinkedIn. And then people, if you reach out to them on LinkedIn, crazy much more better response rate because you reach out with your profile, it states, yo, maybe you're a co-founder and they tried your product and they're much more willing to talk to you than if it's like a just text-based email, which looks very sad, and like nobody will answer to that. And I think it's like a bit overflooded market, but LinkedIn outreach does work very well.
Ah, nice. That's a good learning. But yeah, I can imagine, like if someone writes to me an email, I don't believe emails. Like if an email says, like, I'm the co-founder of, like, I'm like, no, you're not. Like this is automation, or like it's your secretary, or like your assistant. Cool learning. So do you want to pitch your product? I mean, you got this long way. What is Needle doing?
Needle is a vibe automation tool, we call it. So if you're aware of what vibe coding is, you can chat and you can create code. And we realized many people want to create automations and AI agents. And Needle allows you to create these AI agents with very little effort, because you don't need to configure anything. You just describe what you want to build. Let's say I want to build, summarize my emails every day and write them as a summary to a Google Sheet, then create a Google Sheet file from that and send me a Slack notification that my Google Sheet is ready with the action items that I should take based on the Google mail interactions I had yesterday. That's a workflow, for example, I have for myself, and a very common workflow many other people also have. You would just describe this to the Needle chat, and the Needle chat is then creating a visual workflow for you, asks you to create your connectors, and then you publish it and you have your workflow ready to go within a very, very short amount of time. So we make it possible for non-technical people to build workflows. Why is that the case? Because N8N is very popular right now, but still very sometimes a bit technical for many people. So we want to make N8N available for non-technical people. And that's kind of like the route that we are following with Neil.
Can you say what like the most used use case is right now on the Needle platform?
Yeah, all the Google Sheets is the most common integration. Like, for example, scrape people from a specific page and deep research their LinkedIn. Actually, this is the one I use myself is also very common, because people do like to research their LinkedIn. That's a very, very common one.
So, for example, like find all bakeries like in Berlin and try to find out the addresses and telephone numbers.
Yes, exactly. Then you use a Needle agent. You give it tools. You give this tool web search, a browse web. So the Needle agent can go ahead, search the web. Maybe you'd give it also Google Sheets tool. Maybe you have like already the names of the bakeries that you want to contact. It goes to the first row of the bakery and says, oh, bakery Jan Heimes in Berlin. Then the agent will go ahead, search in the web, type kind of like Jan Heimes Bakery Berlin. Then it will open the first 10 pages, look at them, then look at this page, extract the information from that page, bring it back to the AI agent. Then AI agent has access also to Google Sheets. AI agent is like, okay, I understand this row is the first row. I got this information. I will write this information into this row. I'm done with my first task. Now let me move to the second row and do the same thing. And so it's like a browse wrap, scrape, and enrich your Google Sheet, for example. So I see this very, very classic. Research all the mayors of all German towns. Research all the CPOs of startups that are working in sustainability. It's like a lead research is very, very classic. And then enrichment of these leads is a very classic thing, yeah.
Talking about like typical users, I think a lot of startup founders build great products, but then they really struggle with marketing. What are your go-to recommendations for marketing for SaaS founders?
Yeah, I recently created like a LinkedIn post, which is like got like 32,000 impressions. I think that's relatively viral on LinkedIn, you could say, 32,000 impressions. And it drove, I think, like 350 people to my profile. I think you need to trigger people these days, you know, you need to kind of exaggerate a bit. So you need to be a bit like one over the top, you know, because people have very short attention span. And I think for us, very good is LinkedIn as well as Reddit. Interact just with people in the Reddit community and just be authentic, be honest, be real. And yeah, we have also built an automation there, which is tracking actually relevant Reddit posts that are relevant regarding automations. Let's say somebody says, I want to build an automation which has Rack inside. Bro, perfect ICP for me to build work with this guy or woman. And then I get a notification on Telegram, because I've built a new workflow. Hey, yo, there's a new relevant Reddit post around that you should comment in. Here's a sample comment. And I can just go and copy paste this sample comment into it. I may adjust it a bit because I, as a human, will review it. And then this person is maybe excited about it and wants to check out Needle and tries Needle. I see this as a very, very important source for us. Reddit, LinkedIn. Yeah, these two sources, especially Reddit. For me, Reddit, very important.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, to be honest, I'm not like a heavy user of Reddit, but like especially like in the US scene, like Reddit is used heavily. Maybe that's a exactly. good recommendation, especially as Europe. I think we also have loads of like users on Reddit in Europe, but nobody's really like using it as a tool here.
I can just tell you the last 10 users that came into Needle. I just look at the database right now and where they come from. For very last one, LLM search, Reddit, friend recommended, LLM search, Reddit, web search, friend recommended, Reddit again, nice. Friend recommended, Reddit, LLM search. You see, friend recommended, Reddit, LLM search, my top sources.
Friend recommended is this like, tracked somehow, or do people like answer like survey when they enter the product?
They do answer the survey, so take it with a grain of salt. Like say, let's say 80% correct this precision score on this data I give to you. But I mean, it's not complete. It's not random. It's still like relevant, you know.
Do you do something for these to push these friend recommendations?
No, I don't do I don't do anything for friend recommendation. It's just people enjoy the product and they, I guess, say to their friend, bro, I tried this product, it's cool, check it out.
Okay, and talking about a how-to startup, last thing on my list is how to find investors. I mean, obviously, you did a good job, and it's always cool to learn from people who know how to do it. How did you find your investors?
Actually, I found first I think it's a very classic story I'm having, by the way. I think I've heard this many times. You may find first business angels, and business angels want to invest into your company, but with the lower amount. And business angels are often people who already exited a startup, maybe are very well connected in the VC world. And then these guys know VCs, and they are a bit like scouts for VCs. So if you find a business angel that says, yo, I'm interested in putting like 200,000 in your company, 50,000 or whatever it is, then this business angel would also want not to be the sole investor because his risk is very high if he's just putting, like, say, 200,000 himself, and then there's no other investor. 200,000 also doesn't bring you so long. It's better to bring more money so that you have more time to actually hit PMF, because then if you hit PMF, then you scale crazy. So they are interested in bringing, again, VCs on board or other investors. So they are kind of, once you invest one business angel about you and your product, they are kind of advocates for you to other VCs. I would recommend this, actually. And I've heard this story actually very many times, I think, yeah.
So you're saying like getting a business angel like is hard work, but if you have a business angel and your idea is worth it and good, like chances are that you also get support by the business angel for the next round.
Yeah, because he's interested in his investment to also be safe and growing, no? He puts 100K in you. He's not like going to sit like, oh, I put 100K, fucking hell, like I do nothing. He will want his 100K also to go up. So he is going to be here on your side. You'll switch him to become into your team, basically. So I think the business angel is also much easier to, because if they put a smaller amount, let's say they put like 100K, 200K, 50K, they are more likely to do that. And once they are in, then more easy to talk to VCs. If you have nothing and talk to VCs, VCs are very, yeah, like, okay, I listen to you, but I don't really care, to be honest. And I mean, I think sometimes they just also, I think they just jump on calls. Sometimes these VCs just to jump on calls. I mean, sometimes I think they don't really have really interest. They just scout a bit the market, you know. They're just like doing research basically for themselves. They wanted to hear what startup founders are saying, what do they see in the market, blah, blah, blah. Because I have many insights. I see every day what's going on and I see it all day long, but they don't. But they want to hear also what's going on, you know, so they do it a bit like as research, I think. And sometimes they don't really have clear intentions. But once you win the business angel, I think the VCs are not so far anymore. So for example, I think also, if you see, for example, YC startups, and I think YC startups is even a bit of a I wouldn't say I'll call it a Ponzi scheme, but like a bit of a internal group. Let's say YC invests. Then YC, these guys are crazy connected into the VC game, right? It's for sure they are making you very nice intros and you have already the YC label to raise the next round, you know? So it's a bit of a networking game, unfortunately. Also, when I very first started Needle, I thought best product always wins. Nowadays, I think maybe best connected person plus nice product and good team wins.
Ah, interesting.
There is a huge networking factor.
I see the point. Also on the show, there were like already founders where I was like, oh, that's like a really nice product. But I think if that's the missing part, if money runs out at some point, that's like for sure a problem. So yeah, can see that point. Did you ever apply for Y Combinator, or could you imagine going someday?
We applied 2 times and we were 2 times in the interview round. which is already something if you're in the interview round.
Yeah, like for sure.
You are like, in the second interview, I think I fucked up. Because you have just this very short interview, I think it's like 10 minutes. We had 10 times 10 minutes. The first one we had with the founder of Algolia. Algolia is like a scraping tool or like a Elasticsearch tool, yeah. So we were a RAC API and he was the Elasticsearch kind of founder dude, Algolia. French dude, and I think he just didn't really see us like a competitive edge. And in the second time, I forgot with whom we talked actually, but I think I tried too hard to state that we are cool. Like I tried too hard, and because if you try too hard, they think you, oh bro, you try too hard. Like they think what they want to see is you're just a chill dude and have a nice conversation and are confident about what you're doing. But I tried really hard. You know, we have already like onboarded like 5,000 users in the last 4 months and blah, blah, blah. You know, look at me, I'm great. But I think they don't want to hear that. They want to just hear like, no, I know my shit and I'm rocking this, I think. And I was too nervous and I was too pushing too much on trying to sell myself. That second interview, I think we just sucked a bit. And then we thought, okay, fuck Y Combinator. We don't need Y Combinator. We fucking make it just ourselves. And then we never apply it again.
Nice. And never giving up. That's like crucial to everyone here on the podcast who's still running their startups. And I mean, like looking at the stories, like it's insane. Like some people here on the podcast were like talking like really humble about like the first steps. And now like multi-millions are coming in. It's very interesting. Like how the paths of startups go. Thank you so much, Jan, for being today on the show. Like I really appreciate like your humble, cool way to react when I was reaching out to you, being like, hey, I fucked up a little bit with the podcast.
Ah, no, you
and wasn't recording episodes for a while. And we actually recorded one episode like a long time ago. And I was like, yeah, this is probably not up to date anymore. And you were like, yeah, fuck you, it happens sometimes. You're cool. Let's record a new session. Like, I honestly crazy really appreciate you
I
being
appreciate
so cool about this. And wish you all the best and super excited for the next years with Needle. I mean, the AI race for sure is like crazy story. So cool that you're part of it. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you also, Luis. Appreciate it very much.
As always, if you liked the episode, please feel free to like, subscribe, share it with other people. Again, I'm super, super deeply sorry for being delayed with episodes, but I'm super happy that, like, I don't know, like, Jan has a cool energy and he gave me also like this kind of hope to, like, let's fucking start this again. Like if you enjoy doing a podcast, fuck man, do a podcast. So thank you so much, Jan. If you're here, this meant a lot to me, like the conversation we had. Everyone check out Needle. Thank you so much and have a wonderful day.